definitely sounds like a vision or purpose-driven company. And I think, I mean, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners would say that's actually the ideal. But let me take a wild guess here, Carol, that this is what you're going to argue with today.
Yep, I am.
Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're super excited to bring you another episode. I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor for Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. They brew an enlivening beverage from naturally caffeinated, nourishing leaves of a species of holly native to South American Atlantic rainforests. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. On top of that, they support community and ecosystem regeneration, bringing together art, music, and celebrations in many locations. Stay up to date on their events at guayaki.com, and we hope you're going to check out this great beverage with your friends and family. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice, ones you may not know you need to be asking, and in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. Usually a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you really want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hello, Zach.
So as our listeners may remember from last time, we had a request from a very enthusiastic listener who's read some of Carol's books and has been listening to all of our episodes. His name is Peter Nelson. He's the CEO of a company called Threshold. So he actually wanted to know, as a founder of a startup, what to do now to still be around for the long haul. And so just to give a brief recap of last time, well, first, we recommend you stop and go back to get some context in part one of our episode. But just to give you a brief overview, we covered the first two aspects of what it takes to start a regenerative endeavor that lasts. The first is starting from concrete global imperatives and away from abstract ideas like mission statements or broad generalizations, like trying to make society better. The second was starting with essence in the working of a system and how we can contribute to it rather than simply being adaptable to change. Carol, how'd I do?
Yeah, good start.
Cool. All right, so let's give the people a little taste of what's in store for today's episode.
Well, we call it this part two because we're using the same HBR article and the advice it gives because we thought it would be somebody else's version of what Peter normally would hear from the powers that be. We covered the first two suggestions, as you talked about, but the third one is built on the idea that you should be able to create a scalable leadership system, and I think that needs to be examined a bit. The general idea was not bad. It was like getting beyond the founders as the deciders, and that really what you were doing was trying to get a suggestion for how to improve things, but I don't feel like what they offered is much of an improvement. So I would like today for us to introduce a better way to think about what even long-lasting means, because the idea that what we do now at the outset can guarantee you can be around for the long haul is not even the best way to think about it, in spite of what it is the HBR article and how it frames it.
Right. So as we get started here, our focus is all about moving beyond these kind of founder-driven decisions to a more scalable leadership earlier in the life of the business. That was really the kind of impetus of this whole section. So the authors are defining scalable as meaning, quote, to overcome the founder's mindset, unquote, which basically defaults to the earlier leader's way of thinking. They actually specifically suggest that as early as possible, the leaders move to a system of leadership from which they can delegate and distribute decision-making, particularly using vision and values as a way to spread autonomous decision-making. So that definitely sounds like a vision or purpose-driven company. And I think, I mean, I'm guessing a lot of our listeners would say that's actually the ideal. But let me take a wild guess here, Carol, that this is what you're going to argue with today.
Yep, I am. Particularly as the means to make decision-making more non-hierarchical, which they are rightfully guarding against. I mean, I'm not going to argue against that part. One of the hardest habits, however, I have to break of my well-intended founders is thinking about that the highest leadership form is vision, mission, and purpose-driven. That is how you do business and not what you're doing, and it's not how to direct a company.
Interesting. So there's an example that comes to mind here. Is it kind of like telling the crew of a naval ship to remember we're trying to free a country or win a war that ends all wars, for example, but expecting them to be able to navigate the ship day to day using that? You still have to have a captain and senior officer setting and resetting course to get to the targeted spot and do the job there.
Yeah, I think that's a really good metaphor. And we need a much better navigation method than the idea of vision, mission, and purpose. Now, we'll get back to how that gets embedded at some point. But I call what you need as a better method is corporate direction. Now, it also has inside of it grounding in the way of how you manage, but it becomes built in. It is not the mission that hangs out or is put on a board the opening of the company when you walk in the front door. And we talked about this a little bit in part one. How about if you remind us what corporate direction looks like, Zach?
Okay, so here again, we're a young company, so ours isn't totally fleshed out. So just give me a second here, but we've struggled with this a lot. So we're in an industry, both film and games, that's actually accused quite often of teaching people violence. So the intersection we go after instead is game and film studios who are seeking reimagined shamanistic transformational storytelling that we can execute through choreography.
Wow. That's raises all sorts of questions. Let me ask you one of that pops into my mind. What would you not do then? Who would you not work for? Because corporate direction gives you an idea what's in and what's out. So who would you work for and who would you not work for with that reimagined shamanistic transformational storytelling?
I don't think we would work for people who view violence as just something to keep people engaged on the screen, right? That draws people in and keeps them playing and keeps them playing and keeps them playing. For us, this is more about story and narrative and character development that people can connect to and feel like they're taken through a journey together.
How does that relate to anything I might have seen? Can you give me an example?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of examples floating around out there. So there's a couple of pretty big games in the last few years called God of War and another one called The Last of Us. These both started from a place of story, and the story drove everything behind the games. You know, it's funny, the creative director for God of War tells stories all the time where people will hit him up on Twitter or email him and say, you know, this game in what it was, it was amazing and fun and all these other kind of things. But at the same time, it made me really reconsider the nature of a relationship that I had with my father. So thank you for that. So I think it's something along those lines where there's something more meaningful and deeper going on here.
That's great. And that is close to what I think we mean by a corporate direction. I've talked about Seventh Generation before, but I don't think I've talked about what they use as a corporate direction, because it began to rein them in on what they no longer did and got clear and targeted on what they did. And I don't remember, I may have the wording slightly wrong, but it was something like being the authentic voice for sustainability when it applies to one's home at the intersection of planet. So what was going on there is they saw that they had a transparent, highly valued, trusted brand that was in their essence, and they could really speak because the people are confused about what sustainability is, what isn't, what are people saying, when is it greenwashing? They set out to do that, and it created a very powerful brand for them. Then that meant that every product they developed, every sales process they set up, even finance with their suppliers and their customers, had to really foster this authentic understanding. And that was their corporate direction.
Right. And so as a result, as you've said before, as we've talked about, they were able to grow revenues for the next 5 years. So this authentic corporate direction kept them on a course to demonstrate through all these kind of endeavors. And it includes global imperatives, but points to the intersection that their essence means that they can hold.
Yeah. And another way of saying that for you, as you know, you and Super Alloy keep working on it and others, is that corporate direction is a priori to all of the work. In other words, you don't decide who your customers are and the products and all the business models you're going to do until you know what your corporate direction is, because it will tell you who not to work for and then who to really focus on and create amazing change.
Yeah, and it's given us a way to change course if that's needed to get to the destination, which happens over decades, of course, of running a company, rather than having a fixed idea of how to navigate the ship, to keep the metaphor going.
Yeah, and it gives you a way. And this is the word I want to use to replace long-lasting, because it isn't just about resilience. It's about being non-displaceable over decades, even over centuries, it happens for some, in that nobody can displace you because they can't be you. And it's not just about being resilient when disruption takes place. It's about being more you every time in one of those situations.
Because no one can be you, right? There's nothing to displace since each individual is unique.
Yeah, and I think today would be helpful. We'd like to offer three alternatives that we pointed to last time that speak to getting to corporate direction that is often founder and executive decided, but getting to really the understanding of how you come to that corporate direction, like you were doing earlier for Super Alloy, what are the three things that have to be there in order for you to get to that?
Well, I think that global imperatives are a better indicator, giving folks what's needed for decision-making rather than an abstract mission, right? So essence, on the other hand, is a timeless, unchanging aspect that becomes the rudder of the ship we're speaking about. Now, we have the basis for a corporate direction, and that is what everyone on the ship is holding in mind when making local and global decisions, for example. So by developmental infrastructure, I think we mean the basic physical structuring of a business or nation, right? Transportation, communications, sewage, water, electrical systems. These are all examples of infrastructure, but also how we frame how people think or can work through the structures we design and use. So other examples of this are like pay and progression, principles, reporting hierarchies, roles, teams, and ways to participate. These are all defined relationships that require ongoing investment to be known and used. And they're vital to an entity's economic and social development and prosperity.
Yep, that's the basic definition of what infrastructure means. Now, I did put the word developmental in front of it. So the normal way that people create and think about infrastructure is without that regenerative lens. Mostly they design all of those things you're talking about, pay and progression, principles, hierarchies, roles, teams. They design them to arrest potential disorder from some wayward employee and to prevent variances from norms by workers. So most of that is all about controlling people or at least managing error. They're boxes that you can't veer away from. So supervisors and levels of management is the most obvious kind of infrastructure that people recognize, but it's not all by far.
Which is funny because that's what they're suggesting in the article is to do for, you know, an organization that lasts. They talk about extensively delegation made easier, which is crazy, I think, right? So much of this is lost from what's optimal for all humans and other stakeholders like communities, employees, and suppliers.
Yeah, and I want to elevate, again, this idea of enduring being about non-displaceable because it comes from who you are and can't be displaced if you're really working with your essence and paying attention as disruption are happening or as you create disruption. To do that, we have to look at how living systems work if we want to create that kind of infrastructure, not the old kind, not nature, but the interface with all of life. So I want to use that to outline five core principles that are about the working of nature, which can help us look at what this infrastructure looks like when it becomes developmental. So the first principle is any aspect of a living system understands that it's playing a role in a greater system, serving the greater and the lesser systems, and are in direct contact and experience the working of those systems it's in relationship to. So we normally think of those all separate things, right? The bigger and the smaller. But no, in a living systems view, they're all connected. We sometimes call that nested. Secondly, if you're in a living systems view, you are thinking about that you can be counted on personally or as a group to evolve to what is needed by those systems that you serve, so that you can understand them, how they connect, how they work together. So as you said, we might take the example of how an ecosystem of a whole forest works, including the animals that use it and the humans, not just the trees and the water separately. And the third aspect of the five is every aspect of a system innovates in service of the whole being more able.
So to give everybody another example here, an example you might think of is like bees, like insects, bees. Even bees change their engagement in a forest when it's being attacked, just as a person becoming a parent sees what's needed for children and seeks to learn and contribute at a higher level. Even when someone like me, who became a stepfather, took on children, you know, who I didn't birth, but I took them on in my wife's second marriage. We don't just adapt, which is a lower way to engage. We evolve and grow as a living system must.
Yes, those are great examples, Zach. And continuing as we do to try and look at it from a living systems view, let me add a couple more here. The other thing that in a living systems view is every aspect of life is self-regulating. It's built into how it works in spite of behavioral science telling us that it has to be managed from outside. Feedback is not needed to improve. I mean, in humans, we have mirror neurons and empathy receptors to be able to experience our effect on others and non-human life. The real problem is that it's so poorly developed in us as humans. And the fifth principle out of living systems is development of the capacity of each role needs to take place and each entity that's going to be working in real time and working eternally. So we don't assume what we buy or hire is what we get. We assume that there's an ongoing capacity that needs to be built.
So if we look back at the article now, that's actually counter to what we see here in the suggestions. So, you know, for example, when you're speaking about delegation, delegation is not direct contact. It's all intermediated. And rapid iteration is what you substitute when you're working without a clear corporate direction.
Yep, that's really true. You know, there are a couple of guidelines here that occur to me will be helpful in trying to make sense of all this when you're trying to get in a regenerative view. First, the ongoing development of capacity in a structured way is done to grow the capacity of each person in every job they're in. So it isn't training that people, everybody goes to. It's a development like in many places, like Orchard Supply Hardware, for example, had monthly development sessions. Ad did Seventh Generation, DuPont, Google. I mean, all the people that we tell stories about had these monthly development sessions with a core group who was responsible for designing the new thinking into the work and into the ways of working and into developing others to be able to do that. This included critical thinking skills. How does our thinking work? What mind are we using? And being able to use frameworks to do that. Plus, having a lot of personal development. It's embedded in every session, so people become increasingly reflective as individuals and in groups about their behavior and their thinking.
You know, it's funny, my wife, Alexa, I was actually involved in that work with you. She talked about the changes she saw month over month in the lives of the folks who participated at Orchard. And it turns out they weren't focused on just numbers, but on contributing to the lives of their customers in totally new ways. Once that started to move, they were able to see other places in their lives where they could make contributions as well. It seems relevant to me and Peter because our lives don't stop at our businesses. You know, as Dr. Seuss famously said, wherever you go, there you are. So if we aim to be good business leaders, that aim should carry through to being good citizens, fathers, husbands, and so on. And having that support nurtures us as we continue in our endeavors.
Right. So we have this first guideline I was suggesting where you have a structured way to be helping develop the capacity of everyone who is involved. This, the second of those two guidelines is that you use capacity building for the ongoing innovation that people are going to do. And in Orchard's Pie, it was in retail. They had a process where everyone was involved in designing an innovation or creating a new offering that they wanted to bring to the customer and other stakeholders who were community things and ecological things. But it required them to become deeply involved in looking into the future of what these people needed. They learned to make what we called promises beyond ableness, which really means you're promising to a specific entity. It's not just you're trying to learn to do something you don't know how to do. That's not a promise or a worst case is it's for you. A real promise beyond ableness is for a specific customer or a stakeholder who knows you're going to do it and know that over time, as you grow and learn to deliver that, it's going to change their lives. So they're counting on you. That's why it's a promise. Now, sometimes people did this alone and figured out what their promise was, but many of them worked together in groups when they took on a really big challenge. Some of them even went back to school, like in Case Cummins Engine, CDC it's called, in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, to learn chemistry because it was necessary for some changes. So, Zach, we've been doing a little playing here with your corporate director where you're going. What promise do you have like that or might have?
Okay, let me take a deep breath here. So my best pass at this would be something like to provide the next iteration of world building in which characters can provide a transformational story that folks experience by being in the audience.
So why is that a promise beyond ableness? I mean, don't you already know how to do all that?
No, I definitely don't.
Okay.
One thing's for sure, I'm going to have to grow me in order to be able to do that.
Okay. So I'm thinking about world building. I mean, I'm a writer and I'm trying to write my first novel now. And if I were going to write science fiction or fantasy, I have to create a whole world. Otherwise, I have to go establish one. What's the nature of promise that's in the ability to do world building?
Well, what it requires is a certain level of consideration that has to happen. I have to be thinking of and conceiving of a whole world as I'm beginning to engage with characters and the people within it. I can't just be one-off kind of doing motion capture animations for people and sending them off. It requires a whole new set of capabilities that have to be built in me in order to conceive of and help these studios execute in an entire world.
Yeah, I can see how much different that would be than helping somebody shoot a scene.
Yep.
Yeah, I got it. All right. So I guess lastly, we might talk about that we need to design the person coming up with the promise, like you in this case, needs to design an evaluation of that promise and how well it's going to get delivered and how you're going to track it. And you need to be able to determine the effect on the users, but also the effectiveness of them in using it and how it helps them achieve their aspirations. So it isn't just handing it to them. You got to be able to figure out, what difference does it make? And you're probably going to want to do this for all the people who are customers involved, consumers if they're involved, distributors if they're in that supply system. And you can even look at things like Earth. I shouldn't say even. It's probably a good one to ask, what's the effect? And of course, in the case of what we did with Orchard Supply and the other companies I mentioned, is that we really worked on having them be able to track the financial effectiveness for the customer, consumer, distributor, but also back to Orchard, that is earnings, margins, and cash flow. So that's the level of infrastructure we're talking about here and the level of development it takes. They designed and led the assessment of these goals along the way, and all the people who were involved in it. It wasn't just evaluation as a subject, but how it was they were affecting all the people involved.
So there's a trap here that Peter and I need to look out for, right? Because what happens is founders do this for themselves, but they never seem to pass all that on as they grow. Instead of cascading that structuring, they cascade answers, which are their answers to everything. That's a huge shortfall in not only being able to build the capabilities of folks within the whole organization, but this also hits on the issue of knowledge transfer when a founder leaves, which so many organizations complain about.
Yeah, right. All right. So I've given you the first two of things they did. They developed capability, then they built an infrastructure. Now, the third thing at Orchard they did is they focused on the promised innovations and the changes that they were likely to do, but they also looked at personally connecting to the customer, not an abstraction coming from a marketing department, but through something more like what we've called here before market field teams, where a group of people are really researching. They know it will affect the stakeholders in a positive way. So in the case of Orchard Supply, they knew that it would make a difference to the person who really likes to have trend setting and have their home or their yard and all of that be trend setting for all their friends. That's a completely different way or a set of things you have to think about in order to look at how what you're working on will really be effective for them in their lives.
As we've spoken about before, this is usually done by consultants or third-party research firms. Again, losing the opportunity for the folks inside the organization to build that capability.
Yeah. And then finally, the last thing all this developmental infrastructure is tied to, it has to be tied to, justified by, and evaluated in terms of how well it fits with the corporate direction. And as I said earlier, the managing principles. So when the strategy moves, the people move. So we need to shift our corporate direction. We're getting clearer or some way we're going to take it on. That becomes a part of the infrastructure which people need to take into account. In other words, they can innovate and add things, but they don't want to lose essence of the business, which is in the corporate direction. That essence is the core rudder. In fact, corporate direction as a whole is a lot of the core rudder. The reason essence matters so much, though, is because it's timeless. It tells you what you want to pay attention to, how you want to pay attention, and how to season in a way no other business can, because they can't be you. They can't produce what you do. It will begin to set new courses, like the way the moon works, and being able to use the moon in a different way, not just at sea, but in a way that no one else has. I'm just laughing at myself here. You can even look at going to the moon instead of just going to another country, I guess, if you're using it's within your corporate direction. If you're actively using it, then you can do a lot of innovating, a lot of building in a way that you wouldn't without losing direction. And if you have the managing principles, you can maintain the values through the way you manage. So I have a question for you, Zach. What's your reaction to all of what I just said? Because you're a partner and you have to verify kind of your creative new startup about how you're going to grow and how you're going to be doing this for decades to come and maybe more. What's your reaction to these five things we talked about and then the way Orchard carried it out?
It's funny you're asking me this question, and I actually had a question similar to this that kind of showed up earlier for me as you were talking, which is I was worried and kind of thinking about how do we ensure that we can continue to react to changing markets, right? So like, what if our corporate direction was too rigid and we missed something? But I realized that what you're saying here, it actually allows me to move to a more purposeful frame of mind, ensuring that we continue to navigate effectively rather than getting distracted by shiny new things. I can see now that a true corporate direction has actually nothing rigid in it because it doesn't say how we're going to get there.
Right. And you're designing an infrastructure that is paramount to having that innovative flexibility. And I give a bit more guideline, you know, as much as you can do in a book in the regenerative business in the last section. But because you never want to be generic, that is, not borrow someone else's best practice, I don't give you a way you could copy, and you shouldn't try, but it does give you more of a hint about what non-displaceability means, and I think more guidance for what you and Peter are looking for. I think this is all the magic sauce for enduring non-displaceable companies.
Okay, that's what I'm definitely writing down. Not being mission, vision, or purpose-driven, but essence-led. We need to be specific, not generic and abstract. And so coupling an essence and global imperative based corporate direction with a developmental infrastructure would be an excellent place for us to start. So Carol, you're making actually all this sound like a piece of cake to our listeners, but as I definitely know by now, this definitely is not.
Right. Well, that's why I actually created an online live set of workshops where we now bring a dozen or so companies together over a period of time to be able to work on essence-based living systems understanding, regenerative ways of architecting your business. If you want to know more about that, go look on the Carol Sanford Institute website, not carolsanford.com, which is my personal one, but look under offerings and you'll see more about how you could learn or join in, be one of those dozen companies.
And don't forget to keep listening to Business Second Opinion for more on managing principles. There are many resources to help develop the mind that can see and work with a regenerative paradigm, which we use to actually answer this today's episode. So you can use them for how to assess and help overcome the challenges of a less than regenerative paradigm, especially the tendencies towards projecting one's group ideals onto another group, or the creation of abstractions that lead to generic solutions and further degenerative practices that may be hidden from us.
And if you're a business, I want to explicitly invite you to join us at the Regenerative Business Development Community, where we apply regeneration in a living way to your business and give more of the details that we speak about here on Business Second Opinion. We use live principles as we apply them to producing regenerating leadership, strategy, and work design based including on helping human development.
We have a unique way to help with free regenerative education through the Regenerative Business Prize. Nominations are now open for the Regenerative Business Prize, where you get free regenerative education and reflections from our panel of reviewers on your business's integrity with the 7 First Principles. Look at the prize tab on the Regenerative Business Summit website, as submissions are now open until the end of March. And the timetable is on the website also, along with rubric on the prize page to learn how to avoid greenwashing with your good deeds and offerings.
There's many ways to join us. And one of them that is my favorite way, and more people are finding to be so, is for the purchase of books. You can join a book club with me, but at your location, where you take the 9 regenerative life community roles and learn how they play out in your organization and in your life. So you can go look at carolsanford.com offerings under books. You can find one of those, the Regenerative Woman Entrepreneurs Community. And if you look under books, you can find out more about the number of books you need to buy. And you have to do it through my publisher, and you get it at 50% off and free shipping. And that gives you a way to, for free, join the book club.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki and your pursuit of regeneration with great integrity. Also, because of Peter's suggestion for this episode, we're sending him a Get a Second Opinion mug to hold his favorite hot or cold beverage. If you want one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us an article or topics on practices in business that you think need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform help people find us and spread the word.
And one last thing, if I could, we welcome Business Second Opinion champions who make a regular small contribution to help cover our production costs. You can find more about that in the show notes at businesssecondopinion.com. Now, no question, Zach and I love doing this podcast, but sponsors cover less than 10% of the cost. And so we want to avoid advertising if at all possible. So if you'd be up for being a champion, we'd love to also add the idea of sending you a mug if you'll join as a premium level champion.
And thanks as always to NUIT as they sponsor our Business Second Opinion show notes, and Babson College for sponsoring the Regenerative Business Summit. Check out the Business Second Opinion website also for more info. And don't forget to join NUIT as a champion of our podcast. This has been Business Second Opinion.